Netflix wants to promote as fast as connection as possible. And so they come to carriers like us and say, hey, would you peer with us? It cuts down on, you know, latency and jitter and all those bad things that nobody likes.
Hello and welcome to episode 164 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast, brought to you by the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. This is Lisa Gonzalez. In July, we introduced you to Dave Spencer, Chief Operating Officer of NOAANet, the open access wholesale fiber network in the state of Washington. The network, owned by a coalition of municipalities, has operated since 2000 in both rural and metro areas. Well, that interview sparked your interest, and we asked Dave to come back to provide more details on the administrative side of NOAANet, who uses NOAANet, and what services NOAANet provides. Now, here are Chris and Dave Spencer talking about the network.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Broadband Bits podcast. I'm Chris Mitchell, and today I'm talking again with Dave Spencer, the Chief Operating Officer of NOAANet in Washington State. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Nice to be back.
It's really great to have you back. We're having you back so quickly because there was a lot of interest in NOAANet, the Northwest Open Access Network, and people wanted to know a little bit more in detail, so we're going to be diving into that. But maybe we could just start for those who are haven't gotten around to our previous discussion, and you can give us a thumbnail sketch of what NOAANet is.
Sure. We're a municipal network in the state of Washington. We've got about 3,000 miles of network all over the state, and predominantly we have access in every county. All the counties in the state have access to our network, and as a regional network, we sell to a lot of different types of customers and serve a lot of different areas.
Well, I think one of the things that I wanted to talk about is you're a municipal network, but you're also a creature of other municipalities. In some cases, we know of communities that have formed nonprofits to work with other communities, but in the case of NOAANet, you're not a nonprofit. I mean, you operate on a nonprofit basis, but you're actually a municipality in the eyes of the law. Maybe you can tell us how that is.
We're formed by public utility districts, which are locally controlled and ratepayer-owned nonprofits. And so when they formed NOAANet, they banded together using a law called the Interlocal Agreement in Washington that allows publics to join together to provide a service that benefits the various publics. And in this case, they formed a non-profit mutual corporation. It's kind of a unique corporate structure in the state of Washington. But through the interlocal agreement, NOAANet, as a non-profit mutual corp, can have authorities greater or lesser than the public entities forming it. So as a result, any opportunities or restrictions or any of that afforded to a public utility district are the same that are afforded to NOAANet.
And so one of those things is that when we talked originally, you noted the benefits of when you were starting so long ago, 17 years ago.
Yeah, 15 years ago.
Right. You were, there was a formative time for the web, and you embraced open access because you wanted to make sure that you were encouraging investment and not perhaps inadvertently providing a disincentive for others to invest in areas where you were investing as well. But that also means the state law requires you to operate on an open access basis moving forward as well.
That's correct. We felt that in rural areas, that given the high cost of infrastructure, especially broadband infrastructure, fiber optic builds, all of that, very expensive, that if we were going to make that investment, that we would want to have it open to all providers that wanted to come in and serve these rural communities. And as part of that, the state legislature passed a law that allowed the public utilities and NOAANet to serve broadband, but only on a wholesale basis. So, you know, with that combination of state law and the open access by design of the fiber optic network serving these rural areas, we've been able to grow the business from zero, obviously, in 2000 up to the business we have today in 2015.
One of the things that we got questions about is who your customers are. And we've talked about the schools, the anchor institutions, and I know that you provide connections to cell phone towers and things like that. But I was curious if you could go a little bit more in depth for some of the variety of your customers.
So as a wholesaler, we sell to companies that serve the end user. And the end user may be schools or government entities or hospitals or residences for that matter. So we sell to those companies that provide that service. So if you think of the large telecommunications companies, either competitive or incumbent, they're customers of ours.
So those would be like Level 3 and CenturyLink and Charter and you know, the Frontier maybe. I know that a lot of times operators are loath to name their specific customers, but that's the kind of people, the kind of companies I think you're talking about, right?
Correct. And we're in that camp. We treat our customer names under non-disclosure agreements. But yes, those types of companies. And, you know, you throw in the cable companies in there, you know, that need interconnection between their facilities. And, you know, we started as what was called back then, it was an inter-exchange carrier, meaning that we would transport traffic from one serving area to another to connect these telcos or cable companies together across their various investments in the state.
And would you typically do that over a dark fiber basis where each of your customers would have their own fiber, or would you be providing lit services where you might be combining multiple streams of traffic together over a single fiber?
The latter. We generally don't do dark fiber. We provide a lit service that can be segmented for the various types of products and services that these customers want. So just to give you a feel for that, sometimes it's wavelength services. We run a fiber optic network that has multiple wavelengths or channels, if you will, and it could be that the customer wants a point A to point B 10 gigabit wavelength. Okay. When we first got started, we had the state-of-the-art Ethernet and internet protocol-based network. But to get the first customers in the door, everything back then was the traditional telco traffic. It's called TDM, time division multiplexing, and that's a service that goes from point A to point B at various capacities. And so we would sell those to interconnected properties. Then, you know, our product sets evolved to a what's called Ethernet, and there's a carrier-based standard there that we adhere to that connects properties in a dynamically allocable capacity around the state. And then, of course, moving on up the stack, we get into the various Internet products, either the Internet itself or protected private internet networks along the lines of intranet for connecting various sites around the state.
Wow, that's a lot of technology that I think a number of our listeners will be really excited about, and some other listeners might be thinking, is it really that complicated?
Yeah. But just even moving up the stack more, we found that, you know, there's a lot of ways to move bits, right? But now the emphasis is on the applications, the bandwidth-intensive applications that run. So over the top of these services, we've rolled out voice, video, security, surveillance, virtual storage, virtual servers, you know, all of those sorts of products that are over the top of basic internet service.
But how does that, how do you roll that out as a wholesaler, I guess, is what I'm a little confused about.
We have both facilities-based and non-facilities-based customers. And when I say that, I mean customers that have their own infrastructure, maybe their own fiber networks, but need us to connect those together, and internet service providers that have no facilities that simply resell our service as a retailer. So for those customers, well, and really for both facilities and non-facility-based customers, they can buy the services from us and then package them up and resell them to their customers, you know, either businesses, residences, that they can aggregate them. You know, they can sell them in a variety of ways.
So if I'm a entrepreneur in Chelan, Washington, and I'm mm-hmm. going to offer services, fiber services as a small company to residents and businesses in Chelan over the Chelan Fiber Network. I don't know if I can mm-hmm. say Chelan again, but I'm pretty sure I could figure
yeah,
out.
Yeah, you're doing good, Chelan.
then am I contracting with Chelan for those services, or am I going directly to you?
Correct. You would be contracting with Chelan, although you may utilize Nonet in a couple ways. So Chelan PD has invested tens of millions in a state-of-the-art fiber-to-the-home project, and they serve quite a bit of the county. Now, they are
not just that, but we can't let you get away without noting a lot of it's gigabit. I mean, they're really advanced.
Yes, they are. It's very impressive. And we interconnect to the Chelan network. So a service provider, entrepreneur, can lease circuits from Chelan PD to go to the home or go to the businesses. And that serves them in the county. And then if they want to get out of the county, they can contact NoNet or other providers that serve the Chelan area and get back to, let's say, Seattle or Portland or some of the big internet hubs to interconnect with other maybe upstream internet providers or video services. You know, maybe they're caching with Netflix, something along those lines. So that's how it works. And it could be too that NoNet comes into the area because we've got a contract, let's say, to serve a cell tower. And that we would come in and lease circuits from Chelan ourselves and serve those towers that way and then sell our package service, if you will, to the cellular carriers.
And one of the things that you mentioned was something that I had in the back of my mind, which is, do you do things like caching to help all the customers that you have, or is that something that they would arrange on their own for like an open connect service from Netflix to do that caching?
We do that ourselves and pass it through. So peering, it's probably peering is the industry term, but it is caching video services locally. So you think about, when I say local, I mean within the state of Washington. So, for example, we, you know, and this is no secret, that of all the internet traffic, Netflix consumes, you know, at least a third. Streaming video is the killer app right now. And if you think about it, Netflix wants to promote as fast as connection as possible, and so they've come to carriers like us that are aggregating across the whole state and say, hey, would you peer with us? In other words, we want to put servers in your facilities that hold our video content and then have you distribute from there when a let's say a residence hits play and start streaming a video, and then it comes from Seattle instead of coming from, let's say, Santa Clara. And it just it cuts down on, you know, latency and jitter and all those bad things that nobody likes.
Right. I would think, And I would think that's the kind of thing that would actually be a win-win, because you know, you have to give up a little bit of rack space in a, in an area where you have a lot of space dedicated just for that purpose. You have that, but then you don't have to pay all that cost of getting traffic peering with another network, you know, where you may have to pay for transit. And Netflix benefits from the features that you mentioned. And so it seems like a win-win. Is there, am I missing anything for that?
No, that's exactly right. You know, obviously the pairing works both ways. That's why they call it that. It's beneficial to Netflix and it's beneficial to KnowNet. Just as you say, there's economic and customer experience benefits on both sides of the equation.
Right, because, and peering, you get into this whole vocabulary that seems to shift based on who you're talking with, because there's, I think most people use peering to mean settlement-free peering, where there's just an exchange of traffic without any monetary exchange.
Correct.
Whereas others might say we're exchanging traffic, and but one side has to pay the other. And that's what you want to avoid, I think, when you mainly you're paying someone else, right?
That's correct. And it's frankly a hot topic in play now. Of course, with net neutrality, they didn't necessarily address how the peering agreements work. But for us, we prefer the settlement-free route, where we can provide that service on our internet, and you know, not have to worry about extra fees back and forth.
And that's where we've seen some arguments from some large residential suppliers, that they feel like Netflix wanting to put equipment in their network is something that they should be able to charge Netflix a lot of money to do.
Sure.
You know, and that's something that I think, you know, you, KnowNet, could choose to do that, but you see the mutual benefits as being preferable.
We do. We have the understanding that Netflix is just part of the internet. The internet's going to be used for more and more applications through time, the Internet of Things, obviously streaming video, you know, possibly the end of broadcast television, if you believe some people. And that's just more internet. Well, you know, we'll make more. That's the product we offer.
Right. You're very happy to, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Ramp up the bit factory.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm curious about how the fee schedule works. You know, you mentioned that you have a number of services that sometimes are called white label services, I think, where companies can provide your you know, your home monitoring for making sure you're not burglared. I think I just may have invented a word. I don't know if that's a real word. But you know, if you're a video product, you have a number of other products that are available for
mm-hmm.
resale. Are those typically a one-off? I mean, are they typically fees, or is there a percentage? How do you charge for them?
Well, that's interesting, and it's a dynamic model for us right now. Frankly, we've been experimenting with a subscription program where, instead of selling X capacity of bandwidth and then selling, you know, X number of phones and having access control, meaning, you know, locking and unlocking doors remotely and video surveillance for X number of devices, and everything has a price, which is certainly one way to do it, and we have done it that way, to what's called a subscription service, where, depending on the number of employees, there's a fee per employee for the types of services that are needed, and then we right-size the internet connection to have the best possible customer experience. So, for example, we've got a large state park that has conference facilities on it. So we provide them a connection, but also have provide the virtual desktop, the phones, the Wi-Fi, all of that. So it's a complete customer experience that they pay a subscription for, as opposed to just buying a la carte 100 meg of internet or 5 desk set phones or what have you. So it's a work in progress, but we've got some traction on the subscription program. And really, it's just a bundle of various services that is priced based on the number of people that are going to be utilizing the services.
Is there anything else that you think we should cover on our second our follow-up interview? Any details we missed?
There is one area, and you know, we talked about the various products that move bits, and then the various, you know, over-the-top type applications. But NOAANet also provides network coordinated services, and this is the set of services where we monitor networks 24/7. If there's problems, we you know, log trouble tickets. We work on restoration. We coordinate with service providers, and we have a number of the PEDs that subscribe to that service. In addition to that, there can be an engineering component to it, an outside plant, you know, design and build component to network coordinated services. So in a way, it's sort of a broadband business in a box. You know, the munis can come to us and say, hey, we don't really know anything about running a broadband network, but we see our municipality really needs it. What can you do? And we can say, well, hey, we got this product. We're coordinated services. We come in and manage it for you, and for a fee, of course, and interface with the retail service providers.
Right. I imagine that's preferable to every public utility district, for instance, having some person at 3:30 a.m. sitting in an office somewhere waiting in case something bad happens.
Well, exactly. It brings depth and breadth to the mix. So if you're thinking about, you know, a startup and you really don't have any business and you maybe have an IT person that you want to bring into the fold, you know, which is great, but, you know, you're exactly right. At 3:30 a.m. and the network goes down and it's very technical, it's nice to have the backup of a company that provides that 24/7.
Great. Well, thank you for being available to come back on and to tell us more about the details of how NOAANet works.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Chris.
Send us your ideas for the show. Email us at podcast@muninetworks.org. You can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @CommunityNets. If you use Facebook, search for the Community Broadband Networks page. Once again, we want to thank BKFM B-Side for their song, Raise Your Hands, licensed through Creative Commons. And thank you again for listening.